it has strong implications today on the geopolitical level. Obviously, the petroleum market and the need to fuel our economies drives a lot of international behavior, and it can sometimes tie our hands internationally. On the operational level, you know, with heavy liquid fuel requirements, it leaves our troops, it forces us to divert a lot of manpower in battle to guarding convoys and ensuring that fuel can get transported to the operators using it to fuel, you know, aircraft and vehicles and even the generators running the computers in some of these forward operating bases. So on every level you can think of. In the longer term, of course, you have to think about the availability of fuels, the cost of fuels, and the externalities of using them. So the consequences such as climate change, but then just the dollar costs as well, looking at some of the market indicators and thinking about where prices might go in the decades to come, and knowing that DOD is concerned about its increasingly tight budget conditions that it's going to be experiencing, and it's trying to drive up its efficiencies.
And your report actually, right near the front, has a really remarkable chart about fuel energy consumption by fuel source. Mm-hmm. Overwhelmingly large, 77% is petroleum, but natural gas, almost 9%, coal, about 2%, chilled water, renewable energy, about 1%, and other electric, about 11%. I didn't realize they used as many. I thought petroleum would frankly be higher.
Ah, interesting. No, but 77% still constitutes
a huge number, right?
Very large vulnerability. And if you think of, so some of the applications, we started by saying, you know, what is the fuel problem? What is DOD's fuel challenge? And dependence on a single fuel for 77% of everything it does is a huge vulnerability in and of itself. But a lot of that goes into vehicles and aircraft and equipment and assets that DOD has that, that frankly they're still going to have and still be purchasing and relying on decades into the future. So you think about, you know, you can't turn everything electric. There are some applications that you can't use natural gas for, you know. So, replacing fuel or displacing fuel or being able to provide different options so the DOD gains the benefits of diversification of its fuel sources is going to be a big challenge just because such a big piece of that's aviation fuel, such a big piece of that, that energy has to be, you know, has to be able to fly aircraft and fly large aircraft and has to meet technical specifications that are required for our military equipment.
We're talking to Christine Parthamore. She is a fellow at the Center for New American Security about their report, Fueling the Future Force, and looking at this post-petroleum era. One of the recommendations that you make is that DOD create an energy strategy. What goes into an energy strategy?
Well, general strategy, you think ends, ways, and means. So you have to start with setting a goal. So most of the solutions that DOD is going to have to rely on for decades to come are going to come from the private sector, from the academic sector, from the national labs. DOD is not in the business of producing its own fuel and creating new fuels for itself. It has to test and certify those fuels, but it's not in the fuel production business. We leave that up to the private sector. So for DOD, a big part of what it has to do is send a very, very strong demand signal for exactly what it needs to make sure that the private sector is going to be producing the fuels that it requires to run its equipment for decades into the future. Right now and for the next few decades, that's certainly going to be petroleum. The vast majority of it's going to remain petroleum. But as the private sector is developing alternative fuels, we have to make sure that it's producing and designing and coming up with the types of fuels that are going to be useful for DOD. And that extends to bases as well. You know, they tried to go with hydrogen-powered cars and things like that at a few of the bases and sort of test how they work and whatnot. But, you know, you have to get all the pieces right. If the car does not meet what the people on the base want to use that vehicle for, they're just not going to use it. So it starts a strategy for DOD. You know, you have to start with what the goal is going to be to get over the vulnerability and to solve the problem as best as it can. So that's why we focused largely on petroleum, because that's the biggest problem right now. There's a lot of effort from DOD at bases to increase the use of alternative energy. That is wonderful, and we definitely advocate continuing moving in that direction. We advocate for Congress to fund those types of projects to make sure that DOD's, you know, electric infrastructure is good and that they have good resiliency on the bases here at home. But it still doesn't overlap necessarily with that 77% petroleum use. So we started with a very strong goal, and that's that DOD can meet all of its energy needs, fuel all of its aircraft and vehicles without petroleum, make sure that it's in a position to do that by 2040.
Is that doable?
You know, we ran it by just a really wide range of people, and the answers all came up yes. In part, you know, if you ask, could you fuel the entire country, you know, the United States of America or the world, using non-petroleum fuels by 2040, the answer I think you would get back would be, you know, absent a major breakthrough, no. But looking at the amount of fuel that DOD uses and that DOD needs, it does seem feasible. We ran it by people within the department. We talked to alternative and traditional energy, energy providers and energy developers in the private sector, and they did the math. They crunched the numbers and said, yeah, you know, here's the trajectory on scaling up that it would have to take. It would obviously require some capital infusion on their part in the early phases. But a lot of it requires a strong demand signal from DOD for them to get there. And then the private sector tends to react to those demand signals.
Well, and part of this seems like DOD is such a large buyer that this is one of these areas where DOD can really impact the market. If they said, we're going this direction, all of a sudden the private sector would respond to that.
I believe so very strongly. And again, based on all of the, you know, we work at a think tank, but we talk to people in banking and finance and who actually produce the fuels. We talk to biotechnicians and folks at the national labs to make sure that, you know, we're understanding the full market conditions that they see and that they're reacting to as well. There are a lot of people in the federal government who think, you know, overall, it's not that big, you know, 2%, that's not that big of a demand signal. But that's exactly the kind of signal that folks we know in the financial sector, for example, who are looking at where to invest in energy solutions, that's exactly the kind of signal they're looking for. So again, we got a lot of affirmation and confirmation from folks across every different sector who's involved with the energy that DOD eventually consumes, including folks at DOD, that this approach is feasible and that it would send an effective signal that the American industries need to start producing the right kind of fuels for that DOD is going to need.
Your report has a number of different levels and short and near-term goals and objectives that have already been established. Do those go far enough?
Yes and no. They're very, very, very strong start. Particularly the Navy has set very ambitious goals in terms of petroleum and alternative energy use, but also efficiency and conservation, which is going to go a long way toward meeting that. The Department of Defense has grown more efficient in its energy use for decades, and that's a very, very good thing, and that's a good first start. But the thing is, you can grow more efficient ad infinitum, but, you know, if you still have that high consumption, you still have the vulnerability to get around. So they're great, but part of it, a lot of them go to only 2015 or 2020. We think that you need to look longer term and that DOD should establish a longer term goal that marries up with the short term actions that they're starting to take today. And you have to start somewhere. So I really laud the services for their work and the goals that they have set. But I think that you need to extend the timeline and unify them with a really strong, really solid long-term goal as well.